I just have a good time over here. Sandra's not allowed to say anything, but I have a great time over here. I have to say, half the time I can't hear what's being said, but it doesn't stop me. I just make up my own words. I'm just singing, all kinds of things going on over here in my little corner of the I just thought, you know, I'd let you know that, because my mind is wired so differently. It is. We were talking about that in Bible study too. You know, the things. And then I didn't know the Kinnear family was going to be here, but you all can bore them later about. Remember, I got so pumped up about Beethoven's fifth and the four notes, but there was really the fourth movement and the French horn part and all the oboe. And your eyes were just like so glazed over. It was like, what does this have to do with Jesus? You know, I get home, Andreas and Diana, and they're just like, you know, if people wanted to take music appreciation, they just, and then we were in there and we were talking about history, and I can get really fired up about history. I don't know what it is, but I can get fired up about history. And right now your eyes are glazing over and you're saying, does he ever preach? Why can't we ever get happy? Happy's here. Maybe it'd be nice to give Happy a turn to preach. We would all be happier if Happy was preaching. And here's Don, and what's he talking about? And he's going to end up giving you a history lesson about why this passage about Isaiah talks about King Uzziah. Who the heck cares about King Uzziah? And according to the Bible, he's dead. So not only do we never have heard of him, but he's also dead. So we don't know about him. We don't care about him. And all we're told is he's dead. Why is that important? Well, it's important because, you see, there was this kingdom. So you gotta remember the geography. So no, you're not only going to get history, you're going to get geography. All right? So I want you to imagine, here's Israel right here. Okay? Remember how they had the cards? And here's Israel right here. And here's big old bad Assyria. And I see Assyria's up north. All right? And they're north, and they're east, and they're big, and they're strong, and they're mighty, and they're mean. And they're ugly and have warts all over their place. And they come down all the time, and they defeated the 10 tribes. Remember, there's 12. They defeated the northern kingdom, the first 10. Defeated them, wiped them out, whopped them up, did all this stuff. All right? And the southern kingdom, the bottom two tribes are like, oh. How would you like some lunch money? So they try to bribe the Assyrians so that they won't come in and conquer them. But instead of giving them lunch money, the Assyrians say, okay, this is what we'll do. We won't conquer you, but you're going to give us everything. So it's not just your lunch money. You're giving them your car keys, your house keys, your bank book, your credit card. You give them everything so that they will leave you alone. And it still really doesn't work. Okay, so in other words, the reason why this is important, that Uzziah has died, and why I'm telling you about Assyria and all that, is because it's a bad time. In other words, Isaiah has this vision at a time when things are not good for Israel. It's a dark and difficult time. Evil has run amok. No one is listening to God. It's not looking good. And that's when Isaiah gets the call. Did you all ever watch Lord of the Rings? Please say yes, please say yes, please. Yes. Seriously? You don't watch Lord of the Rings? Yes. That's God. Did you know I'm shorter than a hobbit?
No.
That's very, very depressing. Diana looked it up on the internet, and the internet doesn't lie. I miss being a hobbit by 1 inch. A hobbit's, yeah, I'm like shorter than a hobbit, really? That leaves me like to be Gollum. I don't want to be Gollum. But if you're familiar with the book, if you're familiar with the movie, you might remember Frodo, and there he is with the council. Remember? The elf lords are there, the warriors are there, all these mighty heroes are there, swords and spears and bows and arrows and axes. Axes, yeah. You got dwarves. I'm way shorter than a dwarf, by the way. Anyway, all of that is going on, and they're all there. They got the wizard there, and Elrond's there. All these mighty people are there, and they're in this council because it's decided there's evil, and it has to be confronted. Who's going to be the one that goes? Who will dare to take the ring? And Frodo. Do you remember that part? Frodo volunteers. He's the smallest one. He does not have any experience at all. He has never even killed a mosquito. How is he possibly going? He is the small. He's a halfling. He is half the size of everybody else. He's never held a sword. He doesn't know the first thing about it. But he's the one that volunteers and says, I'll go. He sees and hears the need, and his heart responds, I'll go. I'll go. That's kind of what Isaiah does. He hears and sees the need, and he says, I'll go. I'll go. He's clueless. Isaiah's clueless. Frodo's clueless. Have you ever been clueless? Do you remember when you went to school? Do you remember what that was like? How hard could school be? I mean, seriously. All right? There's a book. There's a teacher. All right? So they have the knowledge and you don't. So you just have to listen to them and understand it and everything's going to go just fine. How hard is that, right? It's not complicated. You all got straight A's. You never had to suffer. It was all straightforward. It's pretty simple. It's easy, right? What about work? You ever have a job? How hard can work be? What do? You show up on Monday. They pay you on Friday. Seems pretty straightforward to me. How difficult is work? That's not very difficult. What about marriage? How hard can marriage be? All right? You love them, they love you, no problems, right? No worries. You got nothing to worry about, right? It's all easy, it's all good. What about kids? I mean, seriously, what do babies do? What do they do? They eat, they sleep, and they poop. How complicated is this? Have you ever been so clueless that you were clueless that you were clueless? Do you know what that's like? You know what that's like? You are so clueless, and you don't even know it. I think that's what God does to most of us. I think we screw things up when we try to use our heads instead of our hearts. Because I think it's our hearts and our passion that really lead us into following where God is leading and what God is directing. It's not about the knowledge that we have. It's about the heart that God gives us. Do you honestly think that God wakes up every day and says, oh, I got to make the sun rise. Oh, I got to do this. Or do you think God actually works the world out of a sense of guilt or shame or duty? Or just do you think God maybe works in the world out of love and joy and just excitement and energy and enthusiasm? So what makes us think as Christians sometimes that we all have to do all this stuff as if it's out of guilt and shame and, dude, oh, I'm a Christian. Look at my face. This is serious stuff. There's evil in the world. Yes, there is. And we don't beat it by fighting. We beat it by loving. We beat it by showing other people that you don't have to live the way other people are living. That it is possible to be clueless and joyful at the same time. It is possible to allow your passion to just overwhelm you, not because you're good at something, but because you love what you're doing. I'm not a great husband, but I love my wife. I'm not a great parent, but I love my kids. I'm not a great preacher, but I love preaching. I stunk at football. I was the world's worst musician. I couldn't play tennis. I absolutely loved doing those things. It was exciting for me. I didn't have to be good at it in order to enjoy it. It's an exciting adventure to be able, and God gives us every morning, God gives us an opportunity to experience joy, to work with Him and say, this is going to be a great day. And instead of looking at the darkness and all the terribleness, God gives us an opportunity to say, there is other opportunities for you to see. Yes, there is evil in the world, and yes, there is hatred, and there is oppression, and there's darkness, and there's lying, and there's greed, and there's oppression, but there is also beauty, and there is joy, and there is laughter, and there is love. There are butterflies, there are rainbows. We can be a part of that mission. We can be a part of that ministry. When's the last time you laughed with God? Just laughed with God. You didn't do something because God pushed you down on it. But you did something because you were just so eager. You were jumping up. You were waving your hand saying, that's going to be exciting. I can't wait. This is going to be so much fun. Just kind of like, remember how it was when you first got to do some things you've been looking forward to? Remember the first time you got it on the two-wheeler and you're allowed to go off? You're just like, oh, this is going to be great. Or you get in a car, you can't wait, right? Are you going to graduate? You're glad to leave school. School's glad you're leaving. You know, everybody's glad. And you're so happy because off you're going to go and you're going to have a great event. You're going to you stand up here and you say vows and you're going to get married and you're nervous and you're excited all at the same time and you just don't know what you're going to do. It's going to be so much fun. This is going to be great. You dedicate your child. You say, God, I'm going to promise. I'm promising you, God, I'm going to be the best. I'm going to be the... No. I'm going to be faithful. And I'm going to love. I am going to love. Because ultimately, that's what God wants us to do. Is to love. So many times we get all messed up. We get ourselves all twisted in knots and tied up and wired, thinking that God's wanting us to just be all dutified and being responsible. Yes, 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 there's duty and responsibility and obligation. But there's joy and there's love and there's laughter. And that's part of what Christianity is about. It isn't about religion. It's about a relationship. We do these things because we love God and because we love God's people and because we're honored and happy to be a part of God's team and happy that God gives us an opportunity to be able to share the joy that has touched our own lives, that this is our chance. And yes, it can sometimes seem overwhelming, but like the song says, when we're standing in God's love, then fear has no place. Fear cannot control us when we're standing in God's love. Fear doesn't stand a chance when we stand in God's love. And we allow that to happen. God's beauty is magnified. It's a wonderful, powerful thing. Yesterday, because of duty and responsibility, I'm in my cubbyhole of an office. Not really a cubbyhole, but I'm there. Diana and Andreas are at the Norton Art Museum. How fair is that? So I missed that chance. Now I'm going to go next Saturday. But they're at the art museum. And they're capturing all of the... They said they barely got through the first floor. All of this exhibit and that exhibit and this and this and that. Just so excited to be able to see all of that. And to be able to share that. And sometimes we get ourselves so wrapped in but so narrowly defined about how we think God is calling us. We forget what God's really wanting us to do. God gave us life, not out of guilt or shame or duty. He wants us to have fun. He says, this is an enjoyable place. This is my creation. You're not a stranger on this planet. You're here by intention. I want you to be here. I want you to enjoy it. Sometimes, even when we think we're trying to serve God, we can mess it up. Back in 1879, I was in kindergarten, and... Yeah, all 3 years, best years of my life, and there was this guy Wilhelm, and Wilhelm thought that maybe God wanted him to be a minister, a young guy, and he worked in this small town, mining town, 1879, terrible mining disaster, and he goes in and he starts pulling them out and he's trying to nurse them back to health, and he saves some and he loses some, but the people in that village were really moved by his compassion, all right, and so they came to his church, All right? But he was a terrible, terrible minister. All right? He couldn't preach his way out of a wet paper bag. Okay? He was terrible. And the church official comes in and they said, Willem, you're more miserable than the people you're serving. You are not good at this. And Willem said, you're right. I'm miserable. I don't feel good about this. But I don't know what else to do. You know how it is when people go in ministry? Because they can't do anything else. All right? That's why they go in. If I could have been a musician, I would have been a musician. If I could have been an athlete, I would have been an athlete. But no. So what? I'm in ministry. Why? There was nothing else left. Willem had already failed as a bookseller. He failed at all these other jobs. He couldn't do anything. And now, I mean, where do you go when you fail church? He's out. Church official says, bye-bye. And he notices, you know, he's still in the coal town, and he sees this old man in his sack of coal, and he's all bent over. And Willem's thinking, you know, that's me. I have this huge burden, and I'm wanting to serve God, and I can't find a way to serve God, and I can't even make it in the church. And he takes out this tattered envelope and a stubby pencil, and he draws that guy, and he draws that guy again, and he draws him again. And in that drawing, he begins to be able to share the world. He gives the world a glimpse of the way people are sometimes bored and burdened on the torture as well as the triumph of their souls. And he continued to do that. He failed as a minister, but discovered a new calling as an artist. You know him, Vincent Willem van Gogh. If he had stayed in the church as a minister, making everybody miserable, including himself. But to be able to discover how God has wired him, how God is calling him to serve, to be able to help make a difference, to understand that, to piggyback from last week, to understand that each of us, yes, we have careers, yes, we have jobs, but we have a calling, an opportunity to share love and to share laughter and to share God's joy with creation. That what we have to share is good news. Good news. Because it is dark times. It is difficult times. There are challenges before us. And just like with Isaiah, in that darkness, in that fear, in a time of oppression and great need, God says, who am I going to send? Who else will love my people? Who else will love my creation? Who else will share the love and grace that I have for them? Well, that's you. That's you. That's you. And the reason why you can do that is because you've experienced it. You have felt the transforming power of God's love. He has taken the burden off your back, and he's given you wings. He's given you joy. He's given you laughter. He's given you love. He gives us life, not out of duty, but that we might have fun. He sends us forth with joy, with love. We may be clueless, but we're not joyless, and we're certainly not loveless. Let's listen to God. And when he says, whom shall I send? Let's dare to say, send me. Amen.